Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going on a journey to explore the legendary furry Sondage Watrakhang Amulet.
Ah, yes, the King of Amulets.
Exactly. We've got some incredible research lined up to help us uncover not just its origins, but also like its deep cultural and religious significance in Thailand.
I think what's fascinating is how much we can learn about Thai history and beliefs just by looking at this one amulet and the man behind it.
Totally.
Yeah.
We're talking about Somdet Phra Phuthichan Tufomirangzi, a figure whose life is almost as intriguing as the amulet itself.
Right. Born way back in 1788, his early life is shrouded in a bit of mystery. Some even say he might have been connected to the royal family.
Yeah, I read about that too. It definitely adds to his mystique. What we do know is that he started his monastic journey really young.
Only 13 years old when he entered the monkhood. And his dedication to learning really stood out, so much so that he was actually chosen for royal ordination at age 20.
At the most important temple in Thailand, no less. Wat Phra Siratana Satsadram.
The Temple of the Emerald Buddha. It was there he received the name Phumarangsi.
You know, it wasn't just his intelligence that impressed people. The sources all mention his strict discipline. He really embraced Dutanga.
Those intense ascetic practices, a true sign of his commitment. And it's interesting, even though his knowledge was undeniable, he didn't seem to crave high monastic ranks.
He was content to be called Phra Mahathu for years, really focusing on inner development. A real turning point seems to have been King Rama III taking a strong liking to him.
Oh, definitely. The king saw something special in him, you know, and that led to Somdet Tho's appointment as abbot of Wat Rakhang in 1852. And of course, he eventually reached the highest rank of Somdet Phra Phuthichan in 1864.
It shows a kind of balance, right, between focusing on his own spiritual growth and then stepping into a leadership role to benefit others.
Exactly. And when we look at Somdet Tho's broader contributions, it's clear he left a huge mark on Thai Buddhism. He wasn't just a scholar. He was a captivating preacher, known for his unique style.
I read that he revitalized a really important prayer, the China Bankorn Kapha.
That's right. He basically rediscovered it, adapted it, and made it popular again. He even incorporated it into the creation of Phra Somdet.
I think it's important to mention his dedication to temples, too. Not just Wat Rakhang, but also Wat Intarawhan, Wat Set Tho, and Chayo, restoring them, making sure they flourished.
His contributions were far-reaching. The creation of Phra Somdet amulets was part of this larger dedication to Buddhism.
And speaking of Wat Rakhang, we have to talk about its history.
You know, the temple has a rich past, going all the way back to the Ayutthaya period, when it was known as Wat Bang Wai Yai. It really started to gain prominence under King Thaksin.
Because of its location near the palace, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense, would attract attention.
Exactly. And then during King Rama I's reign, it got its current name, Wat Rakhang, which means Temple of the Bell.
All because of a beautiful sounding bell they found there. It's funny though, the king moved the bell to the Grand Palace.
He did, but he gave the temple 5 new bells to make up for it. It seems he also had a soft spot for Wat Rakhang.
And it was also supported by Princess Thipsutawati, King Rama I's sister. She oversaw some pretty major restoration work there. It even served as a residence for the Supreme Patriarch for a time.
It really underscores how important this temple was in Thai history. And all this leads up to Somdet Tho becoming the abbot in 1852.
His time there really marked a golden era for Wat Rakhang. It's kind of fitting, don't you think, that he created Phra Somdet in such a historically significant place?
Oh, absolutely. It's no wonder he's often just called Somdet Wat Rakhang. The temple is so intertwined with his legacy. You know, the temple even housed King Rama's former residence, which was used as the Tripitaka Hall for Buddhist scriptures. More royal connections. So what sparked the creation of Phra Somdet? There's this idea that he was drawing on an ancient practice of monks making amulets to safeguard Buddhist teachings.
It's fascinating, right? This tradition of preserving knowledge and beliefs in physical form, like these little objects embodying something bigger.
It's quite powerful, and there's a story that he might have been further inspired by finding old amulets in Kamphaeng Phet around 1849.
Kamphaeng Phet, another place with a rich history of amulet making. So it seems like he was drawing on all these threads, these traditions, but ultimately, what was his purpose?
You know, all the sources seem to point to Somdet Tho wanting to offer people a sort of spiritual anchor, something to guide them towards virtuous behavior, to encourage prayer, and living by the Eightfold Path.
And there's even symbolism in the amulet's design, isn't there?
Yeah. The rectangular shape and the Buddha image are believed to represent parts of Buddhist cosmology. But he also created them to commemorate certain occasions or as tokens of gratitude for people who donated to his temple projects.
It's interesting to think that these amulets weren't created in one massive batch.
You're absolutely right. It was an ongoing process that spanned years, actually even decades. You can see the evolution of the design and the materials over time.
So there are like distinct periods of Fra Samdej creation.
You could say that. The early ones, from maybe even before King Rama III's reign, they have simpler molds, less refined. Then the middle period under King Rama IV, that's when the molds become more sophisticated and you see more variety in the designs.
And I think this is when the Fimprok Fo, the one with the Bodhi leaves, starts appearing.
That's the prevailing theory. And then in the late period, around 1866, under King Rama V, things get even more elaborate. A royal goldsmith, Luang Vicharan Shiranai, gets involved, and there's this ambition to create 84,000 amulets.
Wow, 84,000. And what about the materials they used? I mean, we've talked about symbolism, but what were these amulets actually made of?
The primary binding agent was white lime. This was made by burning seashells, sometimes limestone too, and a material called paunafet.
I know people talk about these five sacred powders.
Yes, the Pong Wised Hot Prophet, each with its own specific purpose, like Pong Pathamang for invulnerability, Pong Itije to boost popularity, Pong Maharak for authority, Pong Futakun to enhance merit, and Pong Trinizing for attraction.
So each powder was meant to impart a specific quality or benefit.
Precisely. And what's really interesting is how these powders were created. It involved ritually inscribing and erasing sacred formulas, kind of like imbuing them with spiritual energy.
It's pretty incredible to think about the time and effort that went into making these, even before the actual amulets were shaped.
Oh, absolutely. They also added other sacred materials. Burnt rice from Somdish To's own alms bowl, soil from 7 different forests and 7 salt licks, bits of city pillars, pollen from 108 flowers, even fragments of older amulets.
Including ones from Kamphaeng Phet?
Could be. And then they also use more natural binding agents. Tang oil, honey, sometimes mashed banana, even sugarcane juice.
It's amazing how they combine these everyday ingredients with sacred ones.
Right. And they also included pieces of Somdish To's saffron robes, incense ash, even dried food offerings like rice and bananas that had been offered to the monks.
It's really personal, almost like these everyday items became sacred through their association with them.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it. The crafting process was quite traditional. They would hand mix all these ingredients, pound them together, shape them into these little chinfek, which kind of looked like winter melons. Then they would press those into molds made of slate, stone, or wood. Trim the edges with a bamboo tool, gently tap to make sure every crevice of the mold was filled.
And of course, Somdish To played a crucial role in imbuing them with spiritual power.
Absolutely. He would personally bless each and every amulet through meditation and chanting, especially using the China Bankhorn Kapha. He'd place them in bowls in front of Buddha images, connecting them with Saisin, these sacred threads, during the chanting.
And were these amulets primarily given to devotees directly?
That's right. Unlike some amulets that are stored in temple crypts, these were meant to be worn and cherished by individuals. And remember that goal of 84,000 amulets. It aligns with the number of Buddhist teachings, which really emphasizes Somdej To's intention to spread these teachings through the amulets.
So now let's talk about the five main types of Fra Samdej Wat Rakan.
The Fim, yes.
Fim, right. Each one has its own unique look.
Let's start with the most popular, the Fimyai, which basically means the grand mold or the principal mold. This one represents the main Buddha image seated on a 3-tiered base. Early examples might not have much detail on the face, but later ones, especially those made by Luang Vicharan Shiranai, have more defined features. And there are even variations within the Fimyai, like Okay Wee with the V-shaped chest, Okay Krabok with the cylindrical chest, Sen Sam Tai Na Tap with a line under the Buddha's lap, and others.
Wow, it sounds like a whole world of subtle details.
It really is. Then we have the Fimsong Chedi, which means chedi-shaped mold. You'll see a chedi, a stupa, depicted above the Buddha.
The chedi symbolizes the relics and teachings of the Buddha, right?
That's it. And the Fimsong chedi comes in different sizes. Some are even larger than the Fimyai. Smaller ones are sometimes called Fimyam. Key features to look for are a more slender arch and a pointed tip on the second base tier, which is sometimes called Harua Iem Chen.
Okay, so Fimyai and Fimsong chedi, got it. What's next?
How about the Fimket Buatum, or lotus bud topknot mold? It has a very distinctive topknot shaped like a lotus bud, which symbolizes purity and enlightenment.
That's a beautiful symbol.
Isn't it? and it often has a thicker and rounder arch than the other types. Sometimes the earlobes curve outwards, making a shape called Baisri, and there are variations in the second base tier too. You might see then Sing Quang, which means a wide lion base, or then Sing Kipe, meaning a narrow lion base.
So many variations, it's hard to keep up.
But fascinating, don't you think? Now let's move on to the Fim Thonseim, or the layered base mold. This one has additional tiers below the main base. These smaller tiers are called then same.
Could they symbolize the different levels of Buddha's teachings?
Some people believe so, and this time often has a more slender Buddha figure. There are variations depending on the number and prominence of these salmon tiers.
And finally, we have the Fim Prokfo, right? The one you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. This one is easily recognizable because it features Bodhi leaves surrounding the Buddha. They symbolize enlightenment, of course.
And the number of leaves can vary.
That's right. You might see anywhere from 6 to 9 leaves on each side. Some people believe the number of leaves corresponds to Somdej Tho's age at the time of creation. And sometimes you'll find Fim Prok Pho combined with features from other Fim, like Thonseim or Ket Bua Tum.
So it sounds like identifying these amulets can get pretty complex.
It can be, especially with all the variations and combinations.
Okay, so we've covered their creation, the materials, the different types. What about the stories, the miracles people associate with Fra Somdej? I feel like that's a huge part of their appeal.
It definitely is. People believe these amulets offer protection from all sorts of dangers. There are countless stories of people surviving accidents, recovering from illnesses, even being shielded from black magic.
I read a story about a man named Soup who survived the cholera outbreak in 1873. He credited his Fra Somdej for his survival.
It's a classic example. And beyond physical protection, there's a strong belief that Fra Somdej attracts good fortune, helps with career success, and even enhances personal qualities like charisma and leadership.
And it's all tied to that concept of metta, right? Loving kindness.
Yes. The amulet is believed to radiate metta, attracting kindness and support from others. Some people say they feel a sense of peace or even a coolness emanating from the amulet when they wear it.
It really highlights the power of belief and how it can influence our experiences.
You know, the interesting thing is, while the stories and beliefs surrounding Fra Somdej are fascinating, ultimately its effectiveness is said to be tied to the individual's faith and how closely they follow Buddhist principles.
It's not just about possessing the object, it's about embodying the values it represents.
Exactly. Which brings us back to Somdej Tho and his vision.
It's clear that Fra Somdej Wat Rakong is much more than just an amulet. It's a symbol of faith, protection, and artistry. It's a tangible link to Thailand's rich spiritual heritage, and it all goes back to the remarkable legacy of Somdej Tho.
Which makes me wonder about the deeper meaning behind this enduring fascination with these objects.
What do you mean?
Well, considering the blend of history, spirituality, and personal belief that surrounds Fra Somdej, what does it tell us about the very human desire to connect with something sacred and powerful, something that brings a sense of comfort and hope in a world that can often feel chaotic and uncertain?
That's a really great question to ponder. And on that note, we'll leave you to contemplate the fascinating world of Fra Somdej Wat Rakong and its enduring legacy. Thank you for joining us on The Deep Dive.
Until next time.